If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
You've been listening to parts of Touch of Grey, Truckin' and Ripple, taken from the musical Red Roses, Green Gold, which features the music and lyrics of Jerry Garcia and Robert Hunter. The musical has been getting rave reviews from both deadheads and typical theater goers alike, and so we thought we'd sit down with Rachel Klein, the musical's director, to get her take on the Michael Norman Mann book adaptation, about the show, and how things are going down in New York. The conversation started when I asked Rachel if she was familiar with the Garcia Hunter canon before she started working on Red Roses, Green Gold.
Well, I grew up around it. My parents and my older brother are serious deadheads. So Jerry was playing round the clock all the time. So I knew all of the music intimately, but I hadn't actually seen any iteration of the Grateful Dead. My parents had in the 70s, and from what they can recall, have some great stories. But I came to the project through a quite rigorous interview process, but I was attracted to it immediately because it's, you know, a rock musical derivative of a specific era that I had a very specific understanding of, combined with I met the producers in person and was just like, I love these people. I hope I book this job because I want to work with them.
So you've done a ton of musicals, and you've worked on a ton of, you know, really well-known material. This material is a little bit different, probably, because it is a rock, for lack of a better word, rock musical. And so was getting your head around the story originally written by Michael Norman Mann difficult for you? Was it something that came naturally because of your experience growing up listening to this music and knowing the songs, or at least having a some understanding of what the music was about and the time period was about?
All of the above. So, yes, my background is in directing musical theater specifically. But I, with that in mind, I do a lot of edgy, interesting musicals. I have yet to be hired for something like Anything Goes, although that would be super fun. I tend to do more rock themed, not necessarily band specific. I work with a lot of aerialists, and I usually have monstrous dance ensembles, that sort of thing. But I do work in the development of new musicals. So the interesting thing about this one is that without having a book writer, without having a lyricist in the room and a composer kind of creating new material in the room as well as a book writer, because the music is the most important thing, of course, and the music is pre-existing music that's so beloved that so many people know, then I did get the opportunity to work with Michael, the writer, in tandem throughout the process so that we were able to sort of develop and tailor certain scenes around what was happening in the songs lyrically. So it's like half the work was done for us before we even started. So, which actually does not make it easier. But
right. It's just trying to put a round peg into a square hole or something of that nature, right?
Yeah. Like, you know, a sort of majestically moving ink blot peg into right. A spiral hole, or so, I don't know.
But yeah.
Something like that.
How pivotal was Jeff Comanti in the process? I mean, he's somebody who obviously has a much closer relationship to the material in terms of the music and in terms of, you know, understanding how crowds react to the songs. And though he wasn't there when these songs were penned, he certainly has had a great experience playing these songs since. So did he play a vital role in putting it together?
Oh, absolutely. So Jeff is our music supervisor, which means he oversees the entirety of the music department. And first and foremost, I don't know if you know Jeff, but he's just the most amazing, sweet, darling person. He's easy to work with, super, super calming presence, which is great because it's like he's the one who knows the material the absolute best, but he's also the one calming down all those crazy theater folk who are, you know, running around in a panic, like, we got a show to put up. And, you know, Jeff is there to be like, oh, no, it's all going to be great, you know. So he was sort of our cheerleader and motivator. But he was also our expert. He was working hand-in-hand with Andy Peterson, who is our music director. The distinction in those job categories is that the music director is the person who is directly teaching, like, each individual music note to the performers. And the two of them became best buds and had a really great working relationship, which was lovely to see because I love them both. So I love it when the people I love get along.
Right, right.
But yeah, like anytime there's just like little tiny notes of specificity, like he's like, well, actually the Jerry Garcia look like is specifically supposed to be this. And it was just so great having him there. And it was really cool when certain things weren't transcribed in the sheet music the way they are in Jeff's head. So he'd get up there with the cast and he would just play him on his big keyboard. And those were just some of the coolest moments because the cast got to play with Jeff, you know, it was really, really magical.
I guess what's interesting too about Jeff is that he came to this music a little later in life. So he has, you know, a music background and he came to this music, I don't want to say accidentally, but not purposefully, right? I mean, he was somebody who was recruited in the Bay Area. So he has this deep musical knowledge that he probably brings to the table on top of the fact that he knows the catalog so well and these songs so well.
Absolutely. I mean, Jeff's background is that he was originally a jazz pianist.
Right.
And you can still feel that in him when he's articulating a song. He kind of goes into his jazz boy thing where he's sort of playing the rhythm on his chest and then doing the like boop, 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 boop stuff with his mouth. It's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm not sure if he tells it.
Right, right.
But yeah, he was recruited into it. But the cool thing about that is that when you look at the background of the original members of the Grateful Dead, all of them had diverse musical backgrounds as well when they came together.
For sure.
So
for sure.
Having a jazz guy up in the mix totally makes sense.
I'm curious about the music. So I've seen some, you know, rock musicals, a la Tommy and the ABBA one, and I haven't seen this one, but I would imagine that the story...
Well, Ira, you got to get there. Come on.
Yes. Well, you know, it is on the agenda. But, or you guys should come up to Toronto, to Canada. But in the interim, I'm curious about how well the songs lend themselves to the story. Is this a really good story set to Garcia and Hunter music? Or is it something that, you know, again, you had to... And I guess it's really Michael's story, but is it something that took a long time to bring the two together?
It took a long time on and off. Mm-hmm. I came onto this project this year, as in 2017.
Right.
Michael had been working through several drafts of the script leading up to this,
right,
on and off for, let's be real, for decades. Mm-hmm. This is one of three Grateful Dead themed musicals that he's written.
Wow.
He's the biggest Deadhead I know. It's it's intense. We love him. And like during previews when the rest of us are taking notes, Michael's like dancing in the aisles, just living his dreams to the music. It was amazing. But in terms of marrying the story to the songs, some rock musicals or jukebox musicals are biographical of the artist whose songs are being portrayed.
Sure.
And this is not. This is an original story that Michael came up with. And it's sort of folksy Americana, a family of swindlers, gamblers, scoundrels, kind of wheeling and dealing their way through life.
Right.
And sort of the outline of the story is seems to me like something that could itself be a Robert Hunter song.
Right.
It's not. It's totally original, but it's very much of that world. And a lot of the music that we use is from Working Man's Dead and American Beauty. So it sort of all culminates together.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, and I guess those are the songs that are probably the most accessible in terms of the Dead's catalog. I mean, you don't have, you know, long epic pieces probably. These are all songs from Working Man's and American Beauty that are, you know, 4 to 5 minutes long. And so they aren't these epic songs where the story can get lost. It is a story of, you know, swindlers and gamblers and such. And so I would imagine that songs like Deal and Loser are all a big part of what's going on. I mean, those are the, you know, gambling seems to be one of those themes that really resonates with Hunter and Garcia. So I would imagine that those songs come through quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely. There's the most important moment in the show hinges around Deal.
Right.
Which is really, really cool and was a tricky thing to stage, but we got it done. Because it's difficult because our cast also plays all of the instruments. We do not have a pit orchestra.
Oh, wow.
And not only are they playing instruments, some of them are playing upwards of 8 instruments apiece in the show. So to get the sound to be full and amazing while they have cards in their hands. So they're playing, they're singing, and they're also doing activity that's taking their hands away from their instruments. We had to get creative. The pivotal character in that scene is the actor Michael Riley, who is our drummer. So we had to figure out a way to get him away from the kit in an interesting way to lead this card game while also playing the drums and singing. And we did it. And I'm incredibly proud of it.
It doesn't run for very much longer. Have you guys been extended at all? I know it goes almost to the
end.
We
have.
Oh, that's great news.
Yes. We just recently extended through March 18th.
Wow.
So that gives us another 2.5 months on sale for all of your listeners. Come to New York and see the magic, guys.
Yeah, for sure. And they'll have to. And I guess that's good news. I mean, it's probably because the demand is so high for this. I mean, how has the crowd reaction been to this material? Not the music necessarily, because obviously the people coming to the show know the songs, or at least a large portion of them do, but you know, for the people that come to the show and know the music, are they also saying that the story lends itself well and they're accepting of what Michael and you and the rest of the gang have put together?
Oh, absolutely. People keep leaving with smiles on their faces. The fans, they come, they're singing along with the songs, they're dancing in the aisles, they're having an amazing time. The theater folk, who are a very different audience, are enjoying the spectacle as well. I mean, they're enjoying the show because it's a pretty fast-paced, fun, lighthearted show that hooks people. But they also have responded to, like, the theater folk seeing the band audience and their reactions is almost like part of the show. So it heightens the experience to the people who aren't as familiar with the music, watching those who are. Which is kind of cool, how that just sort of organically develops.
Yeah, so you do have, what would you put the ratio at? Is it like an 80-20 of fans versus theater people? Or what's the ratio on any given night of people who are just coming to another, you know, New York off-Broadway play? Like, how have you been accepted by the theater community, more importantly, probably as somebody who's growing their career in this area?
I mean, the theater community, all right, part one, it's totally a mixed bag. The ratios change daily. Sometimes we have shows of just theater folks. Sometimes it's completely packed with deadheads. When Jeff was back in town playing with Dead & Company at Madison Square Garden, all of our performances surrounding those performances were packed with band fans from out of town, which was really amazing. In terms of how the show is received in the theater community, I mean, every show is received differently, and you know, theater critics can be scrupulous, but we got out of this one great. Like people seem to have a great time and smiles on their faces, and that's honestly, with a show like this, which is about the music and it's about embracing something that already existed that people love, the best possible outcome you can have is when people walk out and go, oh my gosh, that was so much fun. Everything looked amazing. Everything sounded amazing. And they're still talking for days after about how talented the cast is because of all the instruments they play while acting and singing and dancing, because I'm making them dance. I don't care that they're playing a million things. They're on their feet too.
Taskmaster.
Indeed, indeed. But yeah, some of them are just ridiculous. Our fiddle player, Brian Russell Carey, is a crazy, multi-talented instrumentalist, but also a really nuanced actor, singer, dancer. And I have him doing an epic dance solo while he's playing a very complex violin solo. It's amazing. It's every time I see it, it just makes me giddy because I'm like, I can't believe you can actually do this.
I guess having stand-ins or, you know, seconds or thirds for this is kind of difficult in terms of you relying really on, because they're musicians and because they have to know the choreography, it takes a special kind of person to play each of these roles. So I would imagine that the cast is pretty much set in stone unless you have a few people that are, you know, multi-instrumentalists or whatever. I mean, that's tough on the cast, right?
Absolutely. I mean, because first of all, some of the cast, original cast members that came to us, everybody has their primary instrument that they play, of course. Then some of them were like, okay, we're going to teach you this. Like Maggie Hollenbeck, who's amazing. She's a pianist principally, also plays guitar, but we were like, girl, we're putting an accordion in your hand. And she played it like it was no big thing, but she had not actually trained on it. She just is that good. So we started developing different moments around that sort of idea. And then when the understudies came on board, three of the most stupendously talented people I've ever seen, they've got this. I mean, these are hardcore musicians. So they have a natural musical ear, so they're not only able to play multiple tracks that require different instruments, they're also picking up on the nuance, like, of how the words are said. Each character has a different dialect. But people that are that gifted with musical ear can pick up on that just by listening to them and then replicate it. It's crazy. They're so good. Like, I'm like such a proud stage mama about these understudies. They're amazing.
That's great. How familiar were the musicians to the material? I mean, you know, luckily you grew up listening to some of this material. And obviously Michael has experience and Jeff has experience, but I'm curious about the actors in the play or the musicians in the play. How experienced were they with the material, or is it something that they, you know, had to learn pretty quick to participate?
Well, it's a split about 50-50.
Right.
Half the cast came to the project specifically. They submitted to audition because it was a Grateful Dead musical and they wanted to be a part of that. Some of them just happened to be excellent actor, singer, musicians, without a knowledge of the music, but we had a whole study session. Jeff sent them multiple links to videos of different ways the songs were played in different eras so that they all kind of got their rock and roll dramaturgy packages, which was really amazing. Then when Dead & Co. was in town, the whole cast and crew did a field trip to go see so Jeff and support him, but also to like see what the crowd was like at one of the shows and really get a feel for that, which was super cool.
It's amazing, and now they're all Deadheads, right? So no matter where,
yeah,
now they all love it.
All it takes,
right? all it takes is being involved in a show like this. What are the plans? Are the plans to take the show on the road, or is the plan to stay in New York for as long as you can? I mean, because the reaction's been so good, I mean, I would imagine touring this thing would be pretty successful. Or is that not something that you have a say in? Is that up to the producers?
I mean, that is up to the producers.
Right.
I want everything. I mean, if it was up to me, we'd have a satellite production in New York forever.
Right.
With multiple tours happening so that I could go and see the world. That's always fun. But we also have, you know, a lot of people on the blog posts posting like, oh, when's it going to come to my town? I can't wait to see it. And the answer to that is we don't know. We don't know when, we don't know where. But we do know that the intention is to stay open in New York City for as long as possible. And of course that's always difficult because, you know, the city be expensive.
Right, right.
But so far so good. Audiences are turning out and the audiences are having a great time, which is all we can hope for. But we also think, you know, it's a great destination spot. I mean, this is the kind of cool show you want to see when you come to New York to visit, I think. I mean, before I lived here, this is the kind of thing I would want to see. Not that I don't love the big Broadway shows, but like, this is just so much cooler. There's something so special about it. And it being in the Village and it being two blocks away from the Bitter End, which is where Jerry got his first New York City recognition when he was a young man. I mean, it's all very cool. Like, the energy in the air is very cool.
Yeah, and I mean, it's fitting, right? I mean, Greenwich is a great place to have this. Let me ask you about, before we let you go, I'm just curious about Garcia and Hunter as songwriters. You know, this is a topic of discussion that comes up a lot with musicians that are on this show in terms of their place in American music history, specifically as writers, not necessarily as players, but, you know, because the catalog is deep and so different from era to era, you know, where do you put in your humble expertise, where do you put a Garcia Hunter a songbook? Do you put it up there with the Dylans of the world? Is that appropriate? Where do you see things?
Well, I mean, I think that just because Dylan existed in the same era that and was part of a similar movement, I think that they're just so different. I mean, you know, Hunter and Garcia and all of the other gents in the band, I mean, when they were younger, they was like this group, this brain trust of intellectuals all from different backgrounds and different perspectives coming together to create something. And I know that that sounds like, woo, mystical, but it's true. It's kind of like one of those early art movements almost. So what they created together as a writing duo, I think, is really special and unique. And if you look at the trajectory of all of their music, it's sort of genre-defying because it is rock and roll, but it is also folksy Americana. There's country, there's bluegrass, and then later on, there's the psychedelia. I mean, there's so much. There's so many different layers to it, like almost like the Beatles or like Madonna or other super famous artists that sort of go through different genres as they keep evolving. You know, Hunter and Garcia certainly did that. But I think beauty lies in those first meetings when they were like early 20s in that like house in San Francisco, just having these arbitrary creative conversations and coming up with this really great stuff. I think there's something so unique about that.
Well, continued success. I do have to get down there, or you guys have to come up here, and I definitely want to see it.
Well, I'll tell the producers. I mean,
yeah.
If we do tour, our first stop is Toronto.
Absolutely. Perfect. Thanks so much.
I have no say, but I'll try.
Thanks so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. And continued success, not just with this project, but, I mean, your bio and your the things that you've worked on. It's just outstanding. So continued success to you as well, Rachel, and we will see it soon. So thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much, and have a great rest of your day.
Sounds like a great musical, and hopefully it'll continue its run in New York and then make its way across North America. Before we leave you, have a listen to this Grateful Dead classic, Cumberland Blues, taken from May 2nd, 1970 at Harper College. For more information on Red Roses Green Gold, visit redrosesgreengold.com.
If I'm going back in,
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the Grateful Dead and you, their fans. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And find us at thesoundpodcast.com.